Don Sanders is with us, and Don Sanders is National Director of the American Gay Atheist, which is headquarters here in Houston.
Yeah, American Gay and Lesbian Atheist.
Yes,
please.
It's right here. Yes,
right, it
yes.
is. Yes.
Well, I know you work very hard in that organization, and that you've been involved in a lot of different actions and different things that are going on in the community over the years. Is it tough?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I get very overwhelmed by all the obstacles which seem to be in my way. And sometimes I have to just sit back and take a breather and just relax in order to collect my senses with this whole thing. And it is a very tough position, very tough.
I guess one of the first questions to ask is why a national organization specifically aimed at gay and lesbian atheists?
I think that gay and lesbian atheists are one of the most disenfranchised groups in the whole country. Up until the time I got involved in a gay and lesbian atheist movement, let's back up a little bit. I was very relieved back to find that there was such an organization. And I continue to get letters just about on a daily basis from people all over the country who have run across our an advertisement somewhere or a listing of our organization in a directory somewhere or have heard about us in some manner, who write and say, I am so relieved to learn that there is a gay and lesbian atheist organization out here. I think that because so overwhelmed by Judeo-Christianity and by what I am terming these days as a national civic religion, that we are needed like never before in the whole entire national and international gay and lesbian community.
You just look at all the wars that are started by different religious beliefs, but also the fact that even if the country or sort of sanctions some type of religion, it sort of seems to side towards a particular type.
Yeah, it does seem that way. And you mentioned the wars. I read a statistic recently where I believe there are some 50 wars brewing in the world today, and all but two of them have their roots in religion. Yeah, and the thing about it is, since we're headquartered in the United States, of course, this is the country that I know most about, and it was really set up to be a secular republic, and over the years, it has really tended to sway toward Christianity, and this has been going on now for, a good 40, 50 years now, until no one understands that this was not set up as one nation under God. It was, In God We Trust hasn't always been on the coins and currency. Under God hasn't always been in the Pledge of Allegiance. But this is precisely what the religious people had in mind back in the 50s when they intruded these slogans into our national conscience, was that someday we would not know better. And now it's almost true.
Was a lot of that slipped in under the fear of communism?
Oh, yeah. McCarthyism, the height of McCarthyism. It was a way to prove that we were not like our enemy, not a godless atheist country. And so in order to do that, the time was right to put In God We Trust on the coins and currency, to put Under God in the Pledge of Allegiance, to essentially change our national motto from E Pluribus Unum to One Nation Under God. It was an incredible period of time, and it hasn't stopped. And in fact, I think it's escalating.
Now, that was also the time that Madeleine O'Hare brought against the suit about...
That was in the 60s, early 60s. Yeah, that was the famous prayer in schools case, and that was a very landmark decision back then.
Why don't you fill us in on exactly what that decision was? And I understand that Madeleine Murray O'Hara believes that that could be overturned very soon. And tell us a little bit about what the reasoning that is and if you agree with it.
Yeah, well, basically and real quickly, she had a son who attended a Baltimore public school. And every day, I think it was during homeroom or whatever, or public assembly, her son and, of course, all the other students were forced to recite the Lord's Prayer and read scriptures from the Bible. But she objected on the grounds that her son was not religious, he was an atheist, and that the state, essentially, the public school, was forcing him into a particular religious belief. And you cannot get around saying that the Lord's Prayer is not a prayer of a particular religion, nor can you say that reading scriptures from a particular holy book is not advocating a particular religious view. Anyway, she went through the court systems and finally took it all the way to the Supreme Court, where it was upheld. She won. And it was a fairly decent decision. I think it was like 6-3 or something like that. It was an incredible thing.
And it was essentially based on the separation of church and
First
state.
First Amendment Establishment Clause. And what it said was, and people have misinterpreted this thing all along and have for years, for the last 30 years, it simply said that the state cannot impose certain religious practices like prayers and scripture reading and Bible recitation in a public school, in a public setting, in a public school. It does not stop any student from praying if he or she so desires to pray. One can always pray. You can pray right here on the spot as we're talking, or you can pray in your school, or you can pray in your car. Just don't close your eyes while you're driving. But anyway, what it says is that the school system cannot direct certain activities, certain religious activities, sectarian activities. And this has been a big rallying point for the right-wing Christian fundamentalist movement, among whom I include Roman Catholics as well, ever since.
Okay. So yeah. We come to the present time now. And how big is the organization? I mean, you said this is a national organization. So are there chapters around the country?
No, we do not have chapters for various and sundry reasons. Chapters require a great deal of work. They require someone basically who has to look over the workings of chapters and see what's going on. Basically, chapters are intended as little spin-offs of the national organization. But no, we do not. We basically disseminate a national newsletter, and we have a Dial a Gay Atheist program. We can pick up a phone and dial the numbers. So that's basically how we reach out. We're a national organization, 501c3, under education, and that's what we've been doing for, since 83.
Were you always an atheist?
Oh, I was born an atheist. In fact, we were all...
He was born gay, and he was born an atheist.
Right, we're all born atheists, as a matter of fact. And I tend to say, to get a just as a joke, that I'm a born-again atheist. Because, essentially, people are born... Everyone is born without religion. And generally, depending upon the culture in which we live, one adopts the religion of the culture or of their parents or whatever. Yeah, had I been born in Iran or somewhere in the Middle East, the likelihood is that I would have been introduced to Islam. But here in the States and in North or Central Texas, I was introduced to Southern Baptistism. So, anyway.
And of course, Jack is a recovering Catholic, and I kind of come from a Methodist Baptist background.
Yeah.
But in my teenage years, I started really questioning what that was all about and decided that while I still hold to a lot of what is considered morality, I don't really believe the same way, like through the traditional Christian belief system and that do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I think that's pretty fair.
Yeah, well, that's a very sensible thing.
The question, I guess, that is probably asked a few times, many times, is that what is sort of the guard of morality on atheist people?
Well, believe me when I say this, that religion doesn't have doesn't hold the golden key to morality. It likes to think it does, but it does not. And of course, in Judeo-Christianity, proponents of that idea always bring up the Ten Commandments. Well, if you take all of those Ten Commandments, most of those were taken, and I use the term stolen, from religions which preceded it. Basically, humans, all humans, regardless of their philosophical stances or their religious beliefs or indoctrinations or whatever, have the ability to determine what is right and what is wrong. And if all of us suddenly went out and stole and raped and pillaged and burned and did what we want to do, our culture and our society would crumble. I've never done any of those things, and I've been an atheist since I was a real young kid because I, too, questioned very early on, and it didn't add up. But we atheists simply do not rely upon dogma or scriptures or thousand-year-old ideas handed down by nomads wandering around in a desert by which to live. We just simply don't do that. We know what's right and what is wrong. We all live under laws, sets of guidelines, civil laws, and those dictate our behavior, you know.
You're listening to Lesbian and Gay Voices on KPFT. We're talking to Don Sanders, the National Director of the American Gay and Lesbian Atheist. And I know for me, Don, that there's a question, particularly in regards to being a lesbian or gay person, because it seems to me that most homophobia is rooted in those Judeo-Christian belief systems and what we're taught in society. And, of course, I must emphasize that the opinions expressed here are not those of KPFT nor the management or necessarily all of our listeners, but right. We like to present a forum that allows everyone involved in the community with some say. But you were recently affected in your personal life in a very direct way with how those teachings affect us and what kind of harm they can do. And it concerns the loss of your lover, Mark. Why don't you tell us a little bit of that story?
Well, of course, Mark and I worked very hard for the cause, for atheism's promoting separation of church and state in the gay and lesbian community. And while I have the microphone in front of my mouth, I would like to say that I think that separation of church and state is the gay community's most important ally. We will never attain equality as long as we do not promote and protect and defend the First Amendment's Establishment Clause. But anyway, Mark knew that he was sick for a long time and knew he had HIV and went out of his way to protect himself by drawing up legal documents and so on, giving me power of attorney and over health care and over general business, living wills, statements of in those documents containing statements of his philosophies and so on. And his parents and everyone close to him had copies of all of those documents. He did not hide his atheism nor his homosexuality from anyone who was close to him, not even the people where he worked. And he worked in a very technical area in the Texas Medical Center and so on. But nevertheless, as Mark's health condition progressed for the worse, or deteriorated, I should say, it became necessary to involve his parents in this, as is quite frequently the case. And about 2 months before he actually died, I had to call his mother, and his mother came down and helped me at the house to take care of him and so on. And she knew, and his parents knew very well, that he did not want any priests or ministers or anyone like that coming in when he was lying in a bed, incapable of really knowing what's going on. Nevertheless, he was placed in a hospice about a month before he died, and everything seemed to be fine. Everything seemed to be smooth until about a month after he died. I found out second-handedly through some of the people who worked at the hospice that somewhere during the course of his illness, his parents had taken the liberties of phoning a priest and having the priest come in and administer last rites. Now, this was specifically forbidden in Mark's legal documents. It flatly stated, do not, under any circumstances, do this. But that's precisely what they did.
Without you knowing about it.
Without my knowing. Oh, yes, it was totally a secret. We had agreed upon his death that his ashes would be returned to Memphis, Tennessee, for a placement in the family tomb. However, I had not sent the ashes at that time when I found out about it. And I also had another document which gave me the right to do with the remains what I so choose. So I used that right when I found out, and I let the parents know that under no circumstances would they be returned because of what they had done during a period when their son was on morphine and did not was incapable of defending himself and did not know what was going on. Of course, they were very upset about it, but there wasn't a thing they could do. But it just goes to show you that religious people, for the most part, not all of them, and I have some very good religious friends. I even have some minister friends, believe it or not, and we understand each other and get along quite well. But a great many religious people do not respect the ideas and philosophies of those people who want to be left alone with religion. They simply do not. They feel it is their duty to try to save everybody for their particular religious idea.
Did you feel betrayed when you found out?
I felt raped. I felt raped.
Yeah.
That bothered me more than anything. And it took me a long time to get over that.
So, Don, what supported you during that time since you...
Not much. Not much. I had to rely on a few close friends who understood, who were shocked. I relied on medication, and it was not easy. It was a terrible, terrible thing. And even when I think about it today, in the quiet moments at home, it really upsets me because I knew Mark better than anybody. And I knew that he would not have wanted that to have happened at all. And he thought, when he was preparing all of these various and sundry documents and writing very explicit letters to his parents saying, do not, do not, do not, this is not what I want, please respect my wishes, please respect my position, that they did not.
Yeah,
raped their own son.
Having known Mark.
Yeah.
Well, our guest has been Don Sanders, National Director of
First of all, let's ask Don to give us some information how people can find out about AGA.
Going to do that.
Okay. Well, we have a P.O. Box address, of course, which is P.O. Box 66711. And the zip code in Houston is 77266. And, of course, you can always call Dial a Gay Atheist 24 hours a day for commentary. And we also have something called the Open Forum, where listeners call up and leave opinions, express themselves, and we then play back their messages the following week. Very interesting stuff. And that number is 880-4242.
Great.
So,
well, thanks for being here.
Oh, a pleasure.
And we'll be back with more Lesbian and Gay Voices